Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hey, if you've suffered an injury in an accident and would like a free case review, make sure you call the super team at Daspit Law Firm. Free consultations are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 713-CALL-NOW. That's 713-CALL-NOW. Or you can go to the website, DaspitLaw.com.
It's John and Lance.
Do you have any, is there any intelligence out there at all?
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, John is out, Will Kunkel's in, and we've got 2 more hours to go after this little segment here. Sportico came out with their 2025 NFL valuations. It takes into account national and local revenue, TV, radio revenue, just local revenue. They do a pretty good job of getting as close as possible to some of these valuation numbers. And what I'm finding is apparently these teams are worth a lot of money, it looks like. And it also looks like as long as there are deals like the Netflix deal where they, you know, pump a few million into the coffers, the rate of increase, even the Carolina Panthers, who were terrible last year, who fell they fell 3 spots in the team rankings to 27th. They increased their worth by 12% to $5.76 billion.
That's the smallest increase. And out of all the teams, the Panthers had the smallest increase, and it was 12%.
12%. Yep. The highest increase that I saw was 20. No, I'm sorry.
The Rams,
at 34%. Giants at 34%.
Wow.
What are we missing on Giants? Why did the Giants increase
York,
by 34%?
Baby. New York, man.
But why 34%?
Malik Nabers? I don't know.
Can't be. Do they have some kind of, was there something stadium wise that increased, or is it just you're going to, or is it just when a bunch of money, when there's a huge influx, just because you look at the teams that had the big increases, the Cowboys, the Rams, and the Giants. Well, Rams and Giants are coastal teams, but the Jets, Jets went up 19%. Philadelphia won the Super Bowl. They went up 25%. San Francisco, West Coast team,
25%. Yeah, the Jets lost 2 spots.
Texans went up 19%. Texans were number 12. Number 12. Dallas Cowboys, number one for the 6th year in a row, $12.8 billion. But the Rams jumped 34%. Although they didn't overtake, I mean, they still are sitting in the same spot. $10.43 billion. Giants, $10.25. And it goes down. The Patriots are 4. And they operate pretty cheaply. The Patriots don't spend a lot of the Patriots behind the scenes are not a, they're a spendthrift team. They're number 4. San Francisco's 5. Eagles moved up 2 spots to 6. Dolphins 7. Jets 8. Vegas 9. And Washington Commanders 10. Rounded out. The Texans were at number 12. Your bottom 3 team, the poverty-ridden teams, who are only worth 5.63, 5.57, and 5.5 billion, are the Saints at 30. Jacksonville Jaguars at 31. And Cincinnati Bengals, 32.
Winning doesn't really seem to matter too much.
Well, you're just going to make, on average, about 17% increase. Just give us new TV deals, and we're going up,
man.
Up and away.
Jerry Jones, pig in mud, man.
What did he say the other day?
Yeah, so he was at his premiere for his America's Team Netflix show, and he said to the media on camera, and he expanded on it, is that the Dallas Cowboys are a 365-day-a-year soap opera. If we're not getting attention, it's my job to stir it up. Yes, it is nice to have great players. That stuff is important. It matters. But we have sizzle. We have emotion. That's what we have
there's
here.
There's no way Cowboy fans like that.
How can you? If you're a Cowboys fan, you're spending your time, your money, your energy on wanting your team to win. You haven't gotten out of the divisional round since 1995.
And that's when you're winning Super Bowls. Like, you're not getting out of anything.
You're not competitive at a real level.
And you're worried about sizzle?
All he wants is money. And that, well, fine. Okay. He's a businessman. He is not a general manager. He has no desire for winning to be the priority. The priority is this list. The priority
is to
be
worth. I think winning is a priority. I think it's I think it's the same priority. I think it's a priority. I mean,
it's not the priority.
I think it's the, I think they're all one and the same. I really want to win. I really want people to talk about us. I really want my team to be worth the. I think they're all the same thing. It
but
just
it flies
doesn't matter.
In the face.
But they still pay guys.
Sure, but not.
I mean, Dak Prescott.
This Micah Parsons situation.
That's
you're dragging
get done
it
too,
out.
But it's stupid.
In order, right? Exactly. So, but you talk to guys there, and Dalton Schultz left there. He hated that culture there. You have fans going through the building. During practice, getting tours, you have Jerry Jones saying God knows what to the media. Everything is a distraction over
well,
there.
Well,
the
think
goal isn't winning.
I think it's a carn. I think he thinks it needs to be entertainment based. Is to me, I think Jerry really wants to win. Here's the problem: there are certain things that you can't. If you really want to win, you have to have a certain culture in a building.
100%
typically.
Yeah, you got to have a certain culture. You as an owner need to, like, if your goal is to draw this, you wonder why Micah Parsons does his podcast, and then all of a sudden the coaches have a problem with him doing his podcast. But his owner is all about sizzle. His owner is about headlines. His owner is about being the carnival. Like, that's what Micah does. He sees his owner and his leadership doing that. Attitude reflects leadership, right, Captain? Well, you're the captain, right? I mean, that's what the crap is going on over there. If you're a Cowboys fan, the goal is not winning. The goal is to make money. Yes, he wants to win. I'm not saying he doesn't want to win. He wants to win, but he's not willing to do what it takes to win, and that's shut your mouth.
One of the people in chat says, Jamie Roots, who used to be team president, he's passed away, said in studio on this station that Texans wanted to create a Disney experience for the fans, not winning. I don't think that he said not winning. I would be shocked if he said, we don't want to win. We just want to create an experience. And that's pretty much, I'll guarantee all my kids, that he didn't say we don't care about winning.
But that's, you know, to
but,
that point, that's what you hear.
No.
As a fan, you hear
well, he's
not
but,
winning.
But his job, the way he looked at it is, my job is to get sponsorships deals done, to bring money in, and to make it an entertaining product. So here's the thing.
The job of the president isn't to win, because they don't work on the football operations
side. Yeah, he's on the business. He's on the business.
100%.
But, and so his thing is money, and the best way to do that is make it an entertaining product. First and foremost, winning is the most entertaining thing you can do. Ask the Houston Astros. If you win, they will come. People love to win. They love to win. So if that isn't your first focus should be on winning, because with winning comes a bunch of money. You can try to create whatever, and every NFL team tries to create their little Disney experience, some more so than others. There's actually a lot of them that the Steelers are pretty old school. The Bengals are old school. The older organizations are pretty old school. If you're trying to go out there, like, you can make things fun for your fan base. But if you ever lose sight of the fact that winning brings the people in, if you lose all that fun stuff you're trying to manufacture, no one cares. You're cold turkey. No one wants to go out to a product that's not good. Ask the Rockets when they sucked. Ask the Astros when they sucked. People don't want to go. Ask the Texans when they suck.
Jerry is so concerned with the sizzle and the attention and the soap opera that it's bleeding in, not even bleeding. It is fully part of his contract negotiation process. Mm-hmm. It's bled into the Dak Prescott situation. It was part of the Ohio State running back Ezekiel Elliott process. It's part of the Micah Parsons process. All of it bleeds into, because he wants the attention. He wants the cameras.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad he's not
that
the Texans owner.
That BS impacts the team.
Well, anytime your owner's larger than the, you know, as large as the organ, I mean, that's never a good sign.
He can't.
You don't have that much. Cuban was with that a little bit with the.
He's an impediment to winning too much. He's a speed bump on the way to getting wins. The goal should be focusing solely on football and football operations. He is trying to be the president, the owner, and the general manager.
Everything else takes care. Yeah. I mean, you can have a lot of that stuff without. You don't have to. You definitely don't have to try to create sizzle. You're the Cowboys.
This dude went to the podium and said that we don't know if maybe he gets hit by a car. Maybe.
Well, why is he talking?
Bro, what are we doing?
Why is he still talking as much as he does?
Exactly.
I mean, I don't understand. After all these years, you really don't have to have your own radio show, TV show. You just don't need it. 804, we need to break it right here. When we come back, we'll start to reset. We're just combining?
Hell yeah, let's combine some breaks.
We already combined.
Combined. Okay, so we're officially combined, Del? All right, we're officially combined.
Let's roll on.
Our breaks are officially combined. So we roll on. So there's nothing. I mean, look, they're just all making a bunch of money. We already knew that. Desperate Housewives of Arlington is what the Cowboys are. Well, I mean, kind of.
But I feel for the players. It's not the players. It's Jerry. It's Jerry's world. It's Jerry's show. The players want to play. They want to win games. They also understand if they go there because of Jerry, they're going to make a whole lot of money. They're going to get endorsement deals. They're going to get shows. But winning is not the priority. It is something that Jerry wants, of course. He understands that, but he's not willing to do what it takes in order to get the wins and in order to allow his players to focus solely on games. We hear that all the time in the NFL. Like, there are distractions. The outside noise. You got to block out the outside noise. The outside noise is coming from the inside, from the biggest name in the entire sport. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you got to have culture. Winning is a culture that's created. The Texans have made that a focal point. They've done a good job. They've done a good job. D'Amico Ryan's had a vision, and he's followed through with the division. I'll give Nick Caserio credit too, but I think most of the credit, because Nick was here before D'Amico. I think some of Nick's moves have been, you know, he brought in Shaq Mason, and Shaq Mason turns out he was not a culture guy. He was quite the opposite. I think D'Amico knows what it takes, and he wants guys in and out of there. He helped to get Laremy Tunsil out of the locker room, not because he wasn't talented, because he wants a certain culture up front. Is it there yet? No. Is it talented enough yet? No, it's not. But he understands where he needs to go with this. And he said something about a player that I think encapsulates what every coach, as the son of an NFL coach, I can tell you this. Every coach loves certain guys in the locker room. They love certain guys in their position group. And they love certain guys in the locker room. And they love them because of what they do on the field as leaders, but also off the field. They love them because of their intelligence or maybe their competitive nature or maybe their leadership. Or it can be any number of toughness. It can be any number of things. The Texans have one of those guys, but he's a guy you wouldn't really pay attention to. It's MJ Stewart. MJ Stewart came from Miami. Dell knows him. He's a slow player. Painfully slow, as Dell knows.
What?
As a defensive back.
He didn't play at Miami.
Yeah, he was North Carolina, right? He was from the ACC.
Are not trustworthy.
He was from the ACC.
But he didn't play at Miami.
Well, he probably got recruited and he said no.
An avenue to take a shot at my team and just blatantly
wrong. He went to
wrong.
North Carolina. Oh, he probably beat Miami multiple times. That's what it was. I was getting confused there. But MJ Stewart came out of North Carolina where he was also slow. He's tough. This guy's super tough. Played cornerback in college, plays safety now. So he was drafted. He was cut in 2022. He signed with the Texans for a 1-year deal. They liked him so much, they gave him a 2-year extension. The second year of that, 2023, he had a season ending injury. He got a 1-year contract in 2024. They gave him another contract this year. Why are they keeping him around? Let D'Amico Ryans tell you why they keep MJ Stewart around.
MJ is not on the field, but off the field. When we're in the meeting room, MJ is the guy who's asking questions, like keeping the meetings going, like making sure we got a lot of back and forth banter going on in the meetings, like because he asks great questions, like challenging coaches, like why are we doing it this way? Why wouldn't we do it there? Try this. So I love that when players speak up in meetings, and that's what MJ does, sets himself apart. And from that, bringing it onto the field, he's a great communicator. When he lines up, he does a great job of making sure everybody's on the same page. And that's so important for me and how we run our defense from the safety position. If you can't talk, you can't communicate to get everybody on the same page, then I really don't want you out there, right? Because you know everybody's counting on you to make the right check. So MJ does that. Great communicator, not only defense, but also special teams. He's our personal protector. Takes a lot of communication there. So he's a veteran guy who's showing up consistently year after year, carving out a role for himself just because he's a smart player, plays hard, plays physical, and also does a great job communicating.
That's a great example of a guy that no one will talk about. Fans won't talk about him. You don't really want him in the game as a starter because that means that somebody is hurt. But he played 83% of the special team snaps last year. 83%. Wow. That is a core special teams player. 65% in 23. But remember, he got hurt in that year. He only played 8 games. And then 84% of special teams in 2022 with the Texans. Before that, now in terms of defensive snap percentage, he played 10% last year, 31% in 23, and 15% in 22. So he's not getting on the field as a starter or even really getting a ton of snaps on the defense. But in special teams, he's a core special teamer. And every coach – now, I don't know if my dad would love – when players say, why are we doing this? Why don't we do this? I don't know about that part, D'Amico. Not every coach loves when players do that. But D'Amico loves it. But guys like MJ Stewart, when you have guys like that, that means you are making a commitment to having players like that in the room. And that's part of culture, too. It doesn't have to be just at the quarterback position or the best pass rusher you've got. It's guys like MJ Stewart. And that's why I think D'Amico – this is one of the reasons I have so much confidence in D'Amico. He totally gets it. He totally understands. He was a player. He was a team captain. He was one of those glue guys. He was a culture guy. So he knows what it's supposed to look like. And when you have a man – when you have a player who's like, you know, 48th, 46th on your roster – and he's giving you that kind of everything he talked about there. I wanted to spotlight that, and I'm glad somebody asked that question. I wanted to spotlight that quote because that's a great example of D'Amico having an understanding of, I need my locker room to be like this, and this is why I'm going to keep this guy around.
Yeah, and it also, I think, helps the other guys because you want to know your why, like what your role is and why you're doing it, especially in this defense.
Dell does that all – well, actually, John does that all the time. Why are we doing this, Dell? Why are we doing that? Do you get sick of him always asking you why you do stuff, Dell? Why when John's just being inquisitive? I think D'Amico would really like John.
No, he wouldn't. John's not inquisitive.
He's actually not.
He's not at all. He's a guy who goes, okay, I guess we're doing this. D'Amico wouldn't like John. John's not a team guy.
No, D'Amico really wouldn't like John. Actually.
John doesn't wouldn't be.
He would challenge the coaches, but in a bad way.
Yeah, he wouldn't just subscribe to everything that's being told to him. He's not.
John once told a program director he would kick his ass. Do you think D'Amico would like that?
Well, first off, John's not saying that to D'Amico, but John's not a team guy. He's not going to go along because of the greater good. If it doesn't benefit him, then he's not doing it.
Not a great communicator?
I mean, he's done this for years, so I can't say that, but he just is not someone that if D'Amico asks him to do something because it's for the greater good, he's not going to do it. I'm sure Joe George has thoughts about what would be best for the station, but he's not going to tell John about it because John's not going to go along with it.
He's not coachable.
No, not at all.
If D'Amico ran the station, would he get John out of here? Would he ship him off to another station?
He would try, but at some point you got to realize people are assets, and John...
Is John an asset?
Somehow, some way, yes. If we just go...
You wouldn't say that to his face.
I wouldn't pull back the curtain on why he's an asset. It's not about him or his performance, but people seem to like him, and when people like you, it's good in radio because clients like you. So, he's an asset there.
Who's the greatest college quarterback to ever play?
Speaking of John.
Ken Dorsey? You asked. Now you got your answer.
Good Lord. All right, you're going to find out who it is when we come back.
No, I just told you who it is. I don't need to find out anything.
No, don't worry.
Gino Toretta?
Don't worry. No, it's nobody from Miami. We come back.
Stephen Morris.
AP released their all-time All-Americans.
Ah, you're right.
So this is a definitive list
of who
the greatest college players ever.
I got it. Let me take one more guess. Steve Walsh.
It's not Steve Walsh. It's not a supplemental draft pick.
Craig Erickson.
It's not any of your...
National championship winning quarterbacks.
Your crappy.
National championship winning quarterbacks.
Yeah, they won some. You won some. Thanks to good defenses. This is what Miami winning national championships lets me know the Texans can too, even if the O-line's not great.
It's a very different time.
Even if the O-line's not great. So we'll find out how many Hurricanes are on this list, as a matter of fact. 8:13 here on ESPN 97.5. I want to talk about Allstate Windows and Siding. They are my All-Americans when it comes to I talk a lot about windows. The windows were built here in Texas for Texas weather. You know what that means. We got rain, humidity. We have hail, hurricane-strength windows. They guard against all of that. They are made to withstand Houston weather. But the other thing that they do that I don't talk about as much is the siding jobs. Man, they are offering $2,500 off of a complete siding job. They have financing available. They can do 1 year, no payments, and no interest. So if you don't want to pay for a year, you can get it right now. But if you want to pay it off inside of a year, you have no interest payments. So you can kind of pay it off as you go for that month. You have 30% off of each window, minimum 10-window job available for you. But the siding means that once you replace it, which I did on the side of my home. Once you replace your siding, you never think about it again. It's not going to become dilapidated. It's not going to need repairs. It's not going to need painting. You can just spray it off with water and clean it off. That's all you have to do. And it adds not only does it beautify your home, it helps you with your energy efficiency as well, and just gives the protection of your home that you deserve. Allstate Windows and Siding, family-owned and family-operated. You can start the process of getting getting someone out there to measure everything up and get you an estimate by going to the website, allstatewindowsandsiding.com, or just give them a call. Very friendly people at 832-204-1936. That's 832-204-1936.
You're listening to Houston's longest-running sports radio morning show. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John and Lance.
All right, somebody in the chat asked me to do an NFL-style scouting report on John Granada. So, I'll do it as generally as I can. There's no necessarily, it's not necessarily position-specific. So, we'll say average size, average traits, lacks desired explosiveness, always available and willing to play injured slash drunk, or willing to play hurt, not injured, willing to play hurt, which is basically after he's been drinking the next day. Will struggle at times from a communication standpoint with teammates. Oh, no. Can be surly with teammates and is not always coachable. Prepares well and shows up on game day. Adequate hip fluidity. Let's throw that in there just because you got to have to say something about hips. You have to say something about hips. Character red flags must be vetted. Was a serious character concern when he was younger.
Are his teammates going to his birthday party?
Yeah. Oh, they'll go to his. Oh, it was teammates. I'm not Dell, but you're not. But to be fair, Dell, you're not going to anyone's birthday party, so you don't really count.
I'm not going to a birthday party of someone who's going to berate me at his own birthday party.
That's actually true. No, he's the guy who he could. I'm convinced that if he gave a eulogy for someone about halfway through, he has the intentions of doing the nice thing, but then he'll just start making fun of them. Turns like at a eulogy. It would turn into a roast. Someone is being buried and John's roasting him.
There's
a guy twice. I don't know how much money I ended up taking off this guy. One of the worst putters I've ever seen. And people are chuckling like, no, he was terrible. And then one time he didn't pay. So I ended up sticking a bag of dog crap in his car and just left it in there for it. Like, what? He's being buried, John. The guy's dead.
Getting cremated.
Stop telling stories about how you left dog crap in his car. So that would be kind of John's. I mean, you have to mention something about character concerns, character red flags. You have to mention something about not always coachable. You also have to acknowledge that he shows up on game day ready to play, and he will play injured, or he will play hurt. There's no question about that. I think those are the
primary. Yeah, but he's like a 20-play guy. He's not going to give you 40 good plays.
Oh, no, that's a good point. Yeah.
Like by the typically third quarter, durable, he's gassed
out. Yeah, but not a fourth quarter.
I mean, he'll
player.
Be out there. You're going to have a lot of loafs when you watch the film back, you're going to see a lot of times where he's not pursuing the football if he's playing defense.
See, you're doing a good job. You should have. That's right.
I mean, so sure.
Doesn't always hustle from the backside. Play diminishes over the second half of a game.
Tendency to be undisciplined. It's as the game goes on.
Extremely undisciplined.
He doesn't mind his gaps?
No.
Yes. Lacks gaps. Yeah, lacks gap integrity. Lacks gap integrity and will pick up terrible penalties.
Does he have position flexibility?
Shows very little discipline and picks up a ton of flags.
Does he have position flexibility?
Not really.
No. He's pretty much one. He can only do one thing.
He's a one position right tackle only. He's a one position player. Can only play corner. Not going to play any safety. Yeah.
Refuses to, in fact. In fact, might put it in his profile.
Refuses.
He'll tell you, this is my position.
First in, but also first out.
True.
That's a fair one.
He will big up himself saying, I get here early, but he's also out the door before anyone else.
Comes early, leaves early.
Yes, that's what he is.
Not stays late.
No.
No. In fact, when people out here ask him, Sam says, can you do something for me at 10:03? I can't. I already got a golf. I got something in golf.
I know the feeling.
That's the scouting report. That's John's scouting report. I think it's pretty accurate as well.
Before you get started, we don't have a lot of time for anything else because we have a guest coming up. So
make it quick. This will just be quick.
Do you know yourself?
No. Well, no. I need to scout myself because that is not very good self-scouting. But I'll make this quick. Tim Tebow is the greatest quarterback that's ever played, according to the AP.
Lies.
In college football. The greatest. Tim Tebow, Florida. Running backs, Barry Sanders and Herschel Walker. Wide receivers, Randy Moss, Larry Fitzgerald. Tight end, Brock Bowers. So you got new school with Brock Bowers.
You got a problem with those guys?
No problems.
I agree.
No problems with any of those.
Not Tebow, who is it? If Werfel? Both Florida guys.
No, I'm not giving it to
Tommy Frazier, better college quarterback
Tommy
than
Frazier
Tim Tebow.
Really good, too.
Cam Newton? Do you have to have the long longevity?
I can't do it for a one-year guy.
That's what I mean.
But he did it on a team that did not have a lot of talent.
No, he was what he did that year was incredible.
He may have had the greatest season.
Yeah. I mean, Cam carried everyone with him.
It's like Christian Laettner, you know, was arguably the greatest college basketball player we've seen in a
time. No, Barry did it 2 years at Oklahoma State because he was behind
Thurman Thomas.
Thurman Thomas, yeah.
Tackles
are Orlando Pace and Bill Frelick, John Hanna from Alabama, Jim Parker. I mean, he has a bunch of older players. And then Chuck Bednarik was center. They went into the 40s and 50s and 60s, other than Orlando Pace, who was mid-90s. Kicker, Sebastian Janikowski, he was really good. First-team defense, Hugh Green and Randy White, 70s. Ndamukong Suh was 2009. Bronco Nagurski, Minnesota, 29. I didn't even know where Bronco Nagurski played. Linebackers was Dick Butkus, Derek Thomas, and Chris Spielman. Corners back, Charles Woodson, Deion Sanders.
Not Andy Katzenmoyer?
No cats. The big cats didn't make it. Ronnie Lott and Ed Reed. So finally we get somebody from Miami on there.
Sean Taylor?
Out of respect, I would respectfully say there should have been some consideration for just like even two Miami teams that were loaded. That's
disrespectful.
Yeah, you only get one.
Who's the best tight end?
Brock Bowers. Who did you want, Kellen?
Shockey.
Shockey.
As a college tight end?
Yeah, Brock Bowers seems, but you can't, you look at this list, you can't say they're filled up with recency bias.
No.
They're going to 1929.
Brock was the focal point. Was Jeremy the focal point of that team? He had a lot around him.
That's true. Well, Brock, there's Ladd McConkey.
Andre Johnson?
Andre, no, he did, but he had Santana Moss for a year. Reggie Wayne was around him, but I think.
I wish he had some talent around him.
But I think Shockey won the Mackey Award, I think. I'm not sure about that.
Shockey was a really good college player. I mean, Brock was, you're talking about rare productivity, but they had nobody at wide receiver.
They had Ladd. Ladd's an NFL player.
Well, yeah. No, they did have Ladd McConkey, I guess, yeah. Ladd McConkey's going to end up being maybe a better pro than college player, believe it or not. Ladd was a good college player, but, man, he's going to end up being – that's because he has a super quarterback. He has a an elite quarterback.
Does
in
he?
Justin Herbert.
Does he?
The elite Justin Herbert. Michigan, also, while I'm here, Michigan is expected to hear their punishment come down today, and it's expected to be a fine in the sign-stealing thing. Sherrone Moore may get more penalties. He's suspended in weeks 3 and 4 of this year. The NCAA may impose more. That's a self-imposed punishment, but they're not expected to have anything else happen other than a fine. So the sign-stealing thing is going to come to an end. It's going to be announced today or tomorrow, more than likely. So when we come back, Roosh Williams is going to join us, NBA analyst / Rockets analyst. We talk about the new-look Rockets, the schedule release. We do that with Roosh coming up next right here. If you guys want to jump in, you can always come in at 713-780-3776. John Daspit is a name you can trust. He is a lawyer you can trust, personal injury lawyer. When he deals with loss of limb or loss of life, it's a very, very serious situation. Loss of limb a lot of times will happen with people who work at dangerous jobs. And there's plenty of dangerous jobs. And there are accidents where you now have to worry about huge medical bills. The inability to work anymore, long-term disability, that has to be accounted for. And then if this happened due to negligence, John Daspit is there to step in and make sure that your pain and suffering is accounted for, because there's a lot that goes into it. Physical pain, the emotional trauma of what you've gone through, especially if you not just losing limb, but also losing life. Man, oh man, when families have to deal with that, that is so substantial, and it can have huge financial burden, not to mention the emotional toll. So you want someone on your side who is not going to rush through and just try to get a quick settlement and move on to the next case because they're just there for a percentage. You want somebody who is fighting for you and on your side and overturning every stone, and that's what John Daspit and his law firm will do. 713, call now. That's 713-3, call now or go to DaspitLaw.com.
You're back in the Veritex Community Bank Studios with John and Lance
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, Granato out. I'm in with Will Kunkel, and joining us now is our old friend Roosh Williams to talk about some Rockets basketball in general, because we haven't caught up with Roosh for a while, but also we plan on talking about the schedule release, because it's, while it doesn't have the fanfare that the NFL schedule release has, it's a pretty big deal for the Rockets, who get 28 nationally televised games. Now, nationally televised means something a little different than it once did, since there's so many different streaming platforms. But let's bring Roosh on right now from Rockets Watch. And Roosh, this is, it's amazing. You go from not being able to catch a nationally televised Rocket game at all a couple years ago to 28 now. And it's not just because Kevin Durant is here. Now, it helps. He's probably the reason they have the fifth most amount of nationally televised games. But this Rocket team just has some juice, period. With or without Kevin Durant, they were going to have plenty of nationally televised games.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. I mean, it is the KD effect. And then, yeah, to some degree, I mean, look, they broke out in those playoffs. Obviously, they lost that first-round series. But, the country got a glimpse of Amen Thompson. They got a glimpse of Alperen Şengün, right? And then you couple those with a Kevin Durant. And I think that's the reason, for all the love and all the coverage. So 28 nationally televised games. I think they have among the lowest amount of back-to-backs scheduled of any team in the NBA as well. So that was probably my favorite part of the schedule that could be favorable, especially with, a roster that has a couple guys that are up there in age like Kevin Durant.
Yeah, they have 14 back-to-backs. So, they led the league last year with 16, so they have 14 now. I don't know where that ranks. I do like the fact that 7 of them, though, are at home with no travel. So while you're in back-to-back, it's not the same kind of grinding back-to-back where you're flying from one town to another. You're at home. It's just a matter of, who's going to play in how many minutes. And that brings me to Kevin Durant. So we've had Tari Eason, and who hasn't always played in back-to-backs. As a matter of fact, they've shied away from that because of his leg issue. And then Steven Adams, of course, we know doesn't play back-to-backs. But you have Kevin Durant, who played in back-to-back games last year for Phoenix. How do you see the Rockets handling it? I've got to believe that the Rockets look at the back-to-back thing as, look, we got depth behind KD. We're just not going to play him in a lot of back-to-backs because obviously the goal is championship. The goal is not to win as many back-to-back games as possible.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're going to be cautious with him on those back-to-backs, and I think that they would be wise to do so. I do think the Rockets are getting a ton of hype right now, deservedly so. But I do want to remind folks that the West is not going to be a cakewalk whatsoever. And so in those moments where KD is sitting, right, I do think the Rockets might look a little less potent than people think, unless, you know, Şengün and then Thompson have fully kind of taken that leap and they're just ready for whatever. But, yeah, I mean, Steven Adams is going to sit. That's why you have Clint Capella for depth on those back-to-backs. Dorian Finney-Smith, hopefully, we'll play them as well. Fred VanVleet's a little bit older. The Rockets kind of have an older roster, and if they if they're wise, then they will be cautious with Kevin Durant. And if they take some cues from the Astros, then hopefully they don't overplay their players and then kind of ride them down into the ground before it's too late when they try to make a run into the postseason towards the end of the season. But yeah, it's going to be interesting when Kevin sits. You know, what does the offense look like? I think the most important thing about this team is that the foundation for this team has been defense over the last two seasons. So we've done a lot of obsessing over the offense. What's the offense going to look like? But I think the hope is that that defense is going to give them a chance to win on any given night, no matter who they're playing, and no matter if Kevin Durant is playing or if he's sitting.
How do they handle Tari Eason? I'm a little concerned if they're still resting him. Like, is this just going to be an issue for the rest of his life, the leg where – And I bring that up because it could have an impact on what happens contractually down the road with him. But, you know, we know he had the leg issue. He wasn't playing back-to-back games. Is he at a position now where he is good to go and Tari Eason is a full go all the time? Or is this something at age 24 that's always going to be a concern for him?
Well, for his own sake and for the Rockets' sake, you hope that it's you know, an issue of the past and it's right. No longer a thing. But, you know, it's hard to predict. I wonder, I don't know this, but I wonder if, you know, his leg injury and that kind of recurring issue might have anything to do with the fact that he has not received an extension yet, but I don't know that. I will say that the Rockets seem to have plugged some of these depth holes with a guy like Josh Okogie, right? So if Tari Eason does go down, you have another body out there who can play wing defense and give you that hustle and give you that physicality and tenacity. Obviously not at the level of Tari Eason, but just kind of gives you some of that juice. Obviously they still have Jay Chante as well. So they're kind of, you know, situated to where if they do lose a guy like Tari Eason, they can still plug that hole. Obviously you need Tari Eason out there. I think you're going to be relying on Tari Eason quite a bit off the bench. But yeah, if it still is an issue this season, then that would be, to me, that would be a red flag for sure.
I got to tell you, man, I think that Rafael Stone has not only done a brilliant job, and we can't just say Rafael Stone. It's going to be a combination of Rafael Stone and obviously Ime Udoka. But the job that they've done in putting together a roster that is not only deep but flexible in terms of position diversity, the ability to create multiple lineup looks. You are not sacrificing your commitment to the defensive side of the ball. It's really been impressive to watch not only the composition of the roster, but the contracts that have gotten done. We're so used to living in a world where the NBA general managers just get lazy and they just opt to, okay, we'll just, you know, max contract here, max contract there. For guys who are not truly valued as a max player, they're not a max player relative to the league, you know, a league-wide comparison. What a job that Rafael Stone has done, first of all, with Jalen's contract when he had it, with Alperen's contract, but really all of the contracts that he's done so far, I think have been very reasonably valued contracts, and it gives me hope that the same thing's going to happen with a KD extension.
Yeah, I mean, his contracts are something that I think he prides himself on. And I think that was the case before he was really, you know, kind of the GM that he is today. I think it's interesting to contrast, you know, what he's done with Ime Udoka versus what he did prior to Ime Udoka, right? Before Ime Udoka came to the Rockets were just trying to find talent. You know, they were taking swings, they were taking shots. you know, moving up to trade for Şengün, taking a flyer on Kevin Porter Jr., trying to reclaim him and use his talent to see if they could turn him into a star, drafting Jalen Green, all these things, right? And some of the moves kind of seem like just shots in the dark. But then Ime Udoka comes along, and now you see kind of the harmony between the two, right? Ime Udoka is clearly telling front office and management, hey, this is my vision for how to build this team. And now Rafael Stone is able to go, and along with, you know, Patrick Fertitta as well, is able to go out there and say, okay, you know, now we know what you want, and we're going to deliver it for you. And I think you've seen exactly that. And the contracts have been favorable. It's also interesting to see the Rockets kind of publicly message and take the position of, you know, hey, we're not in a rush to extend Kevin Durant. I thought that was interesting. I thought that they would be. So we'll see where that ends up. But, yeah, they've positioned the team, even the Fred VanVleet deal, right? I mean, at first, he was on this enormous deal, and deservedly so. The Rockets needed him, and they needed his presence to do that. Even Dylan Brooks, right, 4 years, $86 million when the Rockets first signed him. They're able to flip the Dylan Brooks contract, get that out of the door, even though it was still a pretty good value contract at the time. They're able to turn Jalen Green's extension into Kevin Durant as well. And then they're able to restructure that final year of Fred VanVleet and then bring him back for you know, somewhere around market value instead of way above market value like it was. So the Rockets have operated with precision, I think, kind of in that regard. Now, I will say, as far as structuring the roster goes, they are taking one very big gamble, and that is that they are putting a lot of stock in Reed Shepard this season. Not necessarily his career, but this season. A lot is riding on Reed Shepard being able to be that ball handler off the bench, be that guy that can be a spark off the bench. When KD's off the floor, when Fred VanVleet is off the floor, that ball's going to be in Reed Shepard's hands, right? And so we'll see if that gamble pays off. That is like the one hole on this roster, right? This roster is stacked with 3-and-D wing guys, physicality, length, all of that kind of stuff. But they are, I don't know how to say it, they're basically hoping that Şengün, Amen Thompson, and Fred VanVleet can really handle the ball handling duties at an elite level, right? Obviously, they can handle the ball, but can they do it at an elite level for a contender? And then Reed Shepard is the guy that they're going to be riding on when the bench units are in.
Do you see, you know, we all want to see Reed Shepard play really well. We'd all like to see him. He needs to play this year. Do you think Reed Shepard playing well is necessary for them to win at a high level in the Western Conference?
I think so.
You do?
Yeah, I mean, now look, maybe if you get to the playoffs, you can kind of trim your rotation down if you have to, and maybe Reed Shepard's minutes get reduced in that regard. But throughout the slog of the regular season, they're going to need Reed Shepard to come out there. I mean, look, Jalen Green handled the ball a lot last season, and now Jalen Green's gone. Now, by virtue of Jalen Green being gone, you get more on-ball reps for Amen Thompson, who I think absolutely deserves them, and I think the Rockets agree with that. You're going to get even more on-ball reps for Alperen Şengün, who already had his fair share. Clearly, you're going to get more for Kevin Durant. By virtue of that, you're going to reduce Fred VanVleet's load, and I think you're going to get a better Fred VanVleet as a result of that, a more efficient Fred VanVleet who can kind of pick his spots and not have to play above his rank. But you're going to need Reed Shepard to supplement that and to kind of be able to be that guy. I do think that Jalen Green's presence would have made it difficult for Reed Shepard to kind of spread his wings and flourish and try, you know, even get a chance to reach his ceiling. Jalen Green's game is such that he needs the ball in his hands to kind of like have that rhythm and get himself going. So it took touches away from others. But I do think they're going to need Reed Shepard. I mean, look at that bench, right? It's going to be Tari Eason, Reed Shepard. I'm assuming Dorian Finney-Smith. It's either going to be Dorian Finney-Smith or Jabari Smith, one of the two. And then, you know, whoever they bring off the bench to back up the big spot, whether it's Stephen Adams, Clint Capella. That's going to be your main four off the bench. Obviously, Cam Whitmore is gone as well. And so out of that four off the bench, none of those guys are ball handlers, right? Maybe Tari Eason can, you know, kind of every now and then do it, but he's not a traditional ball handler. So Reed Shepard's going to be the guy. They can stagger certain players, but again, there's going to be these nights where Kevin Durant sits, right? Fred VanVleet tends to get hurt. So there's going to be, I assume, there will be a stretch where Fred VanVleet rolls an ankle or something. So they're going to need him to step up.
Yeah, that's, to me, if you're looking at a position where the Rockets could take a look at, you know, midseason making a change, it could depend heavily on the health of the backcourt and the play of Reed Shepard, because I could see them looking potentially at another primary ball handler, because that is going to be something that, you know, depending on the growth of Amen Thompson in that regard and taking care of the basketball, that's a big one. How do you see Clint Capella fitting in? What do you think happens with the bigs on this team with Alperen, Steven Adams and Clint Capela. What do you think the strategy is going to be in terms of usage between Capela and Steven Adams?
Yeah, the Capela signing was interesting. Obviously, a nice splash of nostalgia, right? I think everyone kind of enjoyed that aspect of it. I think Clint Capela is going to be Jock Landale, except he's just obviously better than Jock Landale, right? So I think the Rockets plan to kind of limit Steven Adams to around 60 games or so. And so you're going to see Clint Capela have a chance to really kind of make his impact. You know, we talk about the, quote, double big lineups, which I think is hilarious because, you know, basketball has always, up until about like 8 years ago, basketball always had
a, it was always center. Double big.
Yeah, it was always a center and a power forward, right? And so you're getting back to that. So, you know, Steven Adams brings like that brute force physicality, right? Demon on the boards, offensively, defensively, boxes out, makes things difficult for opposing defenses. Because if you're going to put your big on Alperen Şengün, then Steven Adams is just going to box out whoever's left and get the board. Capela's a little bit different, because he's not, you know, brute force and physicality, but he is, and he's obviously older. He's not the same kind of vertical threat that he was, but he still is capable of going over the top and catching a dunk. And Alperen Şengün's never really had a teammate that could do that. The only one that he did have that had the ability to get vertical off of lobs, I guess he has Amen Thompson right now, but in years past he had KJ Martin. And if you remember, him and KJ Martin worked really well together. And so I do think it'll be interesting, right? He's a shot blocker. He's not an elite shot blocker anymore, but he's still a capable shot blocker. So you have a guy next to Şengün who can get over the top, who's very long, right, who can help clean up at the rim in terms of, you know, defensively shot blocking, who can put offensive rebounds back. If you get like a rub or a little screen action just down in the post, you can just flip it over the top and he'll finish the dunk. So they have a very serviceable center rotation. Obviously, Jock Landale did his best, but, you know, Clint Capela, I think, is a much better player. So that's how I see that kind of playing out, right? You're going to want to preserve Adams, and by virtue of that, Clint Capela is going to get his opportunities. And if anything happens to Şengün, then, you know, you still have a starting level center in Clint Capela to kind of plug that gap.
I know you follow all sports here in Houston, so I was it's amazing that how the Rockets and the Texans reemergences have aligned along the timeline at basically the same rate. And you see it happened with two general managers who come in and take over jobs, but then they don't really hit their stride until the new coaches come in. And both new coaches are about accountability, defense, culture, mindset. It's amazing to watch these two teams move along the you know, concurrently and adjacently along the same pathway.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the similarities between Ime Udoka and D'Amico Ryan's kind of in both presentation, right? They're both just like kind of strong, physically kind of overbearing guys. And then just both in philosophy. I mean, they're defense first guys, right? They're no nonsense, no BS types of coaches. And you see how important that is when it trickles down, right? Because an organization is built top to bottom. It takes all levels to be in unison, to be on one page to succeed. And so you're seeing a GM come in able to hire their guy. The Rockets missed with Silas. Obviously the circumstances surrounding that were also very, you know, just unique at the time, with James Harden being on the way out and the Rockets trying to preserve kind of the contending teams that they had. But finally you get to hire your guy in Ime Udoka, you know, Nick Caserio with D'Amico Ryans. And then things just naturally kind of flow down from there. And the team starts to kind of form its identity in the reflection of its coach, right? And that's what these Rockets are. But again, I'm gonna remind fans. I mean, we're getting a lot of hype. Vegas odds are very, very high for the Rockets. We're very favorable for the Rockets, but Denver's no joke, right? They just traded for Cam Johnson, who's going to fit very well, and they got Jonas Valanciunas backing up Jokic. The Warriors have Jimmy Butler in town still, and they're the favorites to land Al Horford. And I think they also brought De'Anthony Melton back. You know, the Lakers are still the Lakers. They still have Luka Doncic and LeBron James. But don't sleep on the Mavs if Kyrie Irving can come back healthy. That team is also very good. And Oklahoma City is Oklahoma City, right? So the West is going to be a bloodbath. And we're going to see if the Rockets can keep up. I think they are situated to do so, but it's not going to be easy. I just want to remind people.
It's a war of attrition without question. But it also, iron sharpens iron, so hopefully that'll happen and they just stay healthy. Roosh, we appreciate you joining us, man.
Hey, thank you so much. Always a pleasure.
Follow Roosh on X @RooshWilliams. You can do that and get his insight into the Houston Rockets throughout the season. We're going to break it right here. I want to tell you about St. Arnold. We have a big listener event party coming up, listener appreciation party. We're doing it at St. Arnold, and the reason's simple. They got space, they got food, they got beer. We got everything that we need. For groups of 20 to 300 people, they've got you covered. St. Arnold, they host events like weddings, corporate meetings, holiday gatherings, family reunions, birthday bashes, company happy hours, trade shows, celebrations of life. All of these things are done. And if you need a smaller, more intimate setting, they've got the Investors Pub. If you want larger groups, which is what we're going to have, and we have about 300 people there, we're using the beer hall. They have full audio visual capabilities, so projectors. You know, you can get whatever information you want there. You can get the audio system working great with microphones. That's not a problem. From a food standpoint, they can do an appetizer table. They can do a full-on feast for you. Their chef is awesome there. You already know they're rocking the best beer in the city of Houston. And they've got cider, soft drinks, something for everyone at St. Arnold. And the game package, which is the brewery game package exclusively for ESPN listeners. When you book your event and you say, I want the brewery game package, they're going to throw you for free dartboards, Jenga, cornhole, pool table, and a photo booth. So all that is available for you. Get started at StArnold.com. First of all, stop by for lunch or happy hour. Have beer. Go watch a game over there. Have great food. But for your private events, you got to get over to the website, StArnold.com. Click on private events at StArnold.com. Click on private events.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Hey everybody, it's Nicole Byer here with some hot takes from Wayfair. A cozy corduroy sectional from Wayfair? Yeah, that's a hot take. Go on and add it to your cart and take it. A pink glam nightstand from Wayfair? Scalding hot take. Take it before I do. A mid-century modern cabinet from Wayfair that doubles as a wine bar? Do I have to say it? It's a hot take. Get it at Wayfair.com and enjoy that free shipping too.
Wayfair, every style, every home.